This is Arnaldo from KOWS Radio in Sonoma County, and tonight I have on the celebrated filmmaker Judy Irving to talk about the timely reissue of her award-winning 1982 film Dark Circle about the nuclear industry. So, hi Judy, this is Arnold from KOWS. How's it going?
It's going okay, given all the apocalypses that we're trying to live through. How are you?
Surviving. We're still under evacuation orders, waiting to see if it becomes mandatory. So just sitting under a pall of smoke.
Yes, it's bad in San Francisco today, too. Much worse than yesterday.
That's become a reality. And of course, that's linked in with what your film's about in a way, because of what we're using for energy.
Yes, it's tough to pitch another apocalypse in the midst of COVID and raging fires here in California and economic collapse and the possibility of rigged elections and, you know, you name it. We've got enough to worry about. But frankly, the nuclear issue is still relatively invisible to most folks. And if nuclear weapons are used, they could wipe out all these other Armageddons within a week or so. So
Good point. That's why
Dark Circle, my film, has been re-released, and it's premiering today.
Yay. And where's that going to be premiering?
It's a virtual theatrical premiere, and so far, I think it's 16 or 20 theaters have signed up. First Run Features is the distributor. So if folks go to First Run Features and Google Dark Circle and go to Playdates, you can see where the movie is opening tonight. I know that in the Bay Area, the Roxy Theater in San Francisco is carrying it, and the Lark in Larkspur also. And then there's the Metrograph, which is a great art house in New York. They've done a lot of extra programming around it, including a Q&A that's on their site now that was conducted by a film comment critic. And then there are other theaters in Baltimore and, you know, just all over the country. But, of course, it's all virtual. You buy the ticket from the theater that you want to support, and you watch it at home. The theater gets half the proceeds, and then the other half goes to the distributor.
So really, yeah, everyone's just trying to find different ways of surviving in this pandemic.
Yes, and it is one way to support small independent art house theaters that cannot open in a normal way to the public because we have to keep this 6-foot difference, distance between us. This is the way that they've worked it out. It's called virtual cinema.
Well, and thank you for the interview. And when I was reading Jake Sigg's blog, it did perk my ears up seeing a film from 1982 being reissued. Yeah, what is the relevance? We thought we'd all moved on, but what has happened to make this happen now?
Yes, Dark Circle was completed and premiered at the New York Film Festival in 1982, believe it or not, 38 years ago. And now it's being re-released in a new restored, remastered HD version online starting tonight. And it's a film, it's a personal film about an issue that most of us consider as a political issue or maybe even an economic issue. It's a personal film about the nuclear industry, both nuclear weapons and nuclear power, the links between the two, and basically following the trail of plutonium between nuclear power and nuclear weapons, and including interviews with atomic bomb survivors in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I think the relevance today, our situation is even more risky today than it was when the film first came out. When it first came out, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists had their doomsday clock set at 8 minutes to midnight, meaning it was 8 minutes away from nuclear Armageddon. Well, today, it's 100 seconds to midnight. And the reason is because Trump is in the White House, and he has the sole authority to launch nuclear weapons on anybody at any time, anywhere.
Wow.
Also, he has withdrawn from several really important nuclear non-proliferation treaties, including the treaty with Iran and the medium-range missile treaty that he withdrew from. So although we made a lot of progress after 1982 and after the huge movement to ban nuclear weapons, we did succeed in bringing the stockpiles down, both the USSR and the U.S. We did succeed in signing a lot of these treaties that brought us back from the brink. But a lot of that is being undone now because of the Trump administration. And they are attempting to restart the production of plutonium triggers, which are featured in Dark Circle at Rocky Flats. That's the actual trigger for hydrogen bombs. And nuclear power, they're trying to promote small, so-called safe nuclear power plants.
Right.
Nuclear weapons, they're trying to promote small, so-called safe battlefield nuclear weapons. So the whole thing is it's just nuts. Sadly, ironically, the film Dark Circle is probably more relevant today than it was when it first came out.
The name Dark Circle, does it refer to something?
Yes, actually it does. When we were searching around for a title for the film, and we had been following the trail of plutonium from weapons to power and back again and to Japan and so forth, there was a column in the San Francisco Chronicle. And I can't remember the name of the columnist at the moment, but he had gone to Ground Zero to report on the nuclear issue and downwinders and the fact that, you know, many bombs have been dropped on Americans in testing, and many bombs have been dropped on the Marshallese in the islands. Oh, Paul, oh God, what's his last name? I can't remember his last name. But anyway, he wrote this column, and he called it Dark Circle because he revealed at the end of the column that he himself had gotten cancer. And he felt that it was circled back to his visit to Ground Zero because that area was still contaminated. And so we felt like that is a perfect metaphor because this plutonium just circles around. You cannot get rid of it. And it strikes you when you least expect it. I mean, Fukushima, which happened way after the film was finished, has the radiation from Fukushima has gone across the Pacific Ocean and landed on the Pacific coast. That's the metaphorical reasoning behind Dark Circle.
Exactly. The energy goes somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and relating it to Sonoma County here, certainly, you know, back in 1960, we almost had the nuclear plant at Bodega Head. And, you know, but for a couple of people, a retired vet and a waitress, it started a movement that stopped it. So in that respect, we're pretty lucky for that here. But you have an additional story to that.
Yes. When I first started to research this issue, Rocky Flats came up, of course, because we had been shooting a film in Denver and realized that we ourselves might have been contaminated by plutonium from the Rocky Flats weapons plant. And then here at home, the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant was being built just south of the Bay Area near San Luis Obispo. And so I started researching Diablo Canyon and its construction and why it was put there. Well, that was the Bodega Head reactor. That was the nuclear power plant that you folks beat and sent away. Now there's just a hole in the ground, the hole in the head, as they say, at Bodega Head.
Right.
But poor San Luis Obispo, which is a more conservative area, they got twin reactors hidden in the hills, on the coast, invisible to most folks, and accepted by the more conservative powers that be down there. So that's what happened. it's Diablo Canyon.
Whew, so yeah, thanks a lot, they say to us.
Oh, yeah, but you have to be proud that you didn't allow it in your community. It was really great, and in a way, that Sonoma action started, that was right at the beginning of the anti-nuclear power movement. We have a lot to owe to Sonoma County.
I think so, yeah. It was one of the first to get stopped, I think, wasn't it? So, but one that didn't get stopped was Diablo Canyon, and obviously your film features a lot of that in it as it was being built in 1982 and the incredible protests around it. Tell us about that and your experience there.
Yes, when we first started making the film, the nonviolent civil disobedience actions were just heating up down at Diablo. And it ended up being the largest nonviolent civil disobedience action in the history of the United States. That's still the case if you count arrests.
Wow.
There were over the course of the action, there were 2,000 arrests down there. And we filmed a lot of them largely at the front gate at Diablo, wave after wave of affinity groups with their arms locked, blockaded the entrance to the plant and were arrested. It's very dramatic because a lot of it happened before dawn as the workers were driving in. It didn't ultimately stop the plant from being built, but it did gain enough time for a young engineer at the plant to discover that the earthquake supports had been installed backwards in the twin reactors.
Who knew?
If the civil disobedience hadn't happened, no one may have noticed this, and the plant may have opened with the earthquake supports installed backwards. Well, they were very embarrassed. The whole thing was shut down for a long time. The earthquake supports were corrected, and the plant eventually went online. Now, to bring it up to date, it's nearing the end of its life, and there are so many earthquake faults under and around Diablo Canyon, including the recently discovered Hosgri Fault, that PG&E decided, okay, we're gonna shut it down rather than try to fight the massive resistance to relicensing it. So it's going to shut down in 2024, 2025, but the Mothers for Peace, who are still active down there, and lots of other groups are too, are trying to get it closed before that, because it's super risky. If there were an earthquake, it could be a big problem.
Exactly, exactly. That is just in a very bad situation. It would be ugly. The whole coast would be contaminated.
Right. And in fact, you see and hear what would happen in the case of an explosion down there in Dark Circle. That's why it's still relevant. It's crazy, but something that we made, that Chris Beaver and Ruth Landy and I and others made 38 years ago, still speaks to the current era.
Exactly. And also goes back to the people who were involved in it, the corporations, the politicians, all those people, lobbyists, that same system seems to be still there. Who are the players in it then and now? Has it changed that much?
Yes, that's a very good question. In fact, that brings up the issue of censorship. I'll just backtrack a little bit on this. Once the film came out, it did very well. It won a grand prize at Sundance, and it was distributed theatrically. And then after the theatrical distribution, we tried to get it on PBS, on national PBS. Why not? And KQED, the local station, originally accepted it, and they presented it to the national folks. Yes, we want to have this as a national screening. Well, we hit a brick wall. At PBS, they wanted us to cut a certain sequence that had been filmed at the arms convention, where different corporations sell weapons, some of mass destruction, some are simply AK-47s, you know, some are drones that can drop bombs. And they wanted us to cut that entire sequence because in the sequence, we highlighted the companies, the corporations that build the elements that go into the hydrogen bomb. Corporations like General Electric, Union Carbide, Rockwell International, University of California, Los Alamos, various labs were involved as well. Now, we also added their logos and their slogans, and PBS didn't want us to do that. Well, we found out that legally, unless we were creating our own hydrogen bomb and trying to sell it, we were legally allowed to use their slogans and logos. It's just information. And so we refused to cut the sequence, and feeling that every fourth grader should know who builds the hydrogen bomb. And finally, in years later, in 1988, Mark Weiss dreamed up the idea to put a national series on PBS called POV, Point of View, to host strong documentaries like Dark Circle. And we were in the second season of POV. It was on in 1989, 7 years after it first came out. And it won a national Emmy for PBS. PBS was very proud of that Emmy, ironically enough.
They're always late to the party, aren't they?
Yeah, right. As to your question of who is building these components now, a lot of the companies have changed, but I know Martin Marietta was one of the corporations at the time. I'm just not certain right now. I should really get up to speed on that. But you can bet that defense contracts still are cost plus, and corporations love them because they get the contract and then they add all the extra costs that, oh, gee, it costs more than we thought it did, you know. They love these contracts. They're extremely lucrative. They go over budget all the time. They take longer than they should, and they make money. So that's still happening.
And then we get to the end product, the waste. You mentioned places around the country. I mean, there's so many places, Hanford, Rocky Flats, Atomic City. I mean, there's places all over the country have been contaminated and contaminated the communities, and billions are being poured into it. And I'm sure the contracts being taken by the same people who made the mess to begin with, I would imagine.
Yes. In fact, Kerr McGee Nuclear was both making this stuff and then cleaning it up. Karen Silkwood worked at Kerr McGee inspecting fuel rods, and faulty bad welds would be sent to Hanford. And it's just filled with graft and crime and fraud. In fact, there have been a couple of very high-profile FBI arrests at utilities in South Carolina and Illinois that were covering up massive waste, folks trying to build or prop up nuclear power plants. So it's ongoing, and one of the problems with the waste is, where are you going to put it? We have been fighting that issue for decades. There is no long-term waste storage facility, and even if there were, there would be massive resistance to transporting that waste across the country to get there, because there's the possibility of horrible accidents happening if it's on a train or a truck. So what's happening is that for nuclear power, the waste, the used up fuel rods, the rods that have been irradiated and are giving off horrible radiation, are being stored on site at every nuclear power plant, including Diablo Canyon. Wow. And so I was talking to some Mothers for Peace folks trying to get up to speed on what's going on now with the waste issue at Diablo, and they're assuming that the waste is going to have to stay there. So they're advocating for this dry cask storage, which is safer than what the fuel rods are in now. Uh-huh. It's just a big mess.
Billions and billions.
It's the most ridiculous way that I can think of to boil water, to make steam, to make electricity. I mean, why do it with radioactive materials when you could do it in other ways?
I know that's that single-mindedness, and even at the when you hear top politicians, meant talking about, alternative energies, they'll do biomass and solar. All of a sudden, you hear nuclear slipped in there as part of the package still.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's totally ridiculous because of the waste and because of the danger that's inherent in literally just running a nuclear power plant. It's a perfect terrorist target. Anyway, hopefully we'll be able to just wind it all down. There are lots of groups working on this in the background, kind of invisible now, but there's a terrific group called, if you just remember, Back from the Brink. There's a group sponsored by Physicians for Social Responsibility and other national organizations that have been involved in this forever, trying to get countries and organizations to sign on to a petition that would ban nuclear weapons. And as soon as they get to 50 countries at the UN, nuclear weapons officially become illegal, like chemical weapons and other things that have been banned. So it's even though the nuclear weapons states have so far refused to sign this petition, other countries have, and we only need seven more countries to sign on for nuclear weapons to become officially illegal in internationally. So there's that, and there's also folks who are fighting sort of the revival of plutonium trigger production, which they want to do at Los Alamos Scientific Lab in New Mexico. That's nukewatch.org. And then they're also trying to get plutonium triggers made at Savannah River Site in South Carolina. So srswatch.org is bird dogging that. So yeah, if you look into it, there are lots of folks that are still active on this issue, thank heavens.
Yeah, exactly. As you say, there's so many different things to juggle. It's hard to keep watching something that's been going so long, and so
Yeah,
and
right.
so invisible, as you say. And that's the thing. If and with these small, cute, cuddly reactors, they're talking about rolling out, things could get pretty insidious pretty quick.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Yeah, the companies that build nuclear power plants have been basically stonewalled for a long time on building more in the United States. And they've tried to sell them to China and so forth so they can make money. But also they're realizing, "Oh, let's make them smaller. Let's make them little and cheaper." And well, the problem with that is that then you would be spreading plutonium all over the place, even worse than it is now. Because the waste that's produced in every single nuclear power plant is plutonium, which is the raw material for bombs. This is one of the main points of Dark Circle, because it's something that the nuclear industry doesn't want us to know. They don't want us to know that nuclear power plants produce the raw material for bombs, period. It's kind of crazy, but the reason that it's invisible is because we did make a lot of progress over the past 3 decades, almost four. However, brought down the nuclear stockpiles. We essentially stopped the production of nuclear power plants in this country. But a lot of that is being dismantled now, which is why it is important to put this apocalypse on your list. You need to add it to COVID and and global economic collapse and whatever else you're worrying about.
Why not? Bring one more on. Who cares anymore?
Yeah, really.
There's just so many layers to the whole thing when you think of it, how it pervades society, how it's built into it, literally, so it's hard to extract it.
Yes, it is. And the take that we the approach that we took in Dark Circle, which I think is why it still works today, is a personal approach. I narrated the film, for instance. It's a film about the impact of the nuclear industry on regular, ordinary people. And we specifically avoided interviewing experts and getting pro and con, the classic I don't know, news approach.
Right.
It's a very different approach, and at the time, it was not common for the filmmaker to narrate her own movie, but it kind of, in a way, became necessary because we were linking together all these disparate locations and people, and it was pretty much the only way we could do it in a coherent way. So it ends up being a personal film about a political issue. And I think that's why it has legs, as they say in Hollywood.
Right, exactly. Because you can look at the big part of it and just gets people confused, all the technical things, but when you make it human, that makes a difference.
Yeah, and it just brings it down to a regular, ordinary citizen. What is the impact of this industry on you, whether or not we have a war? So I'm really pleased that First Run Features has taken it on. It's having this revival thanks to an HD remaster, a restoration, which was assisted by the Academy Film Archive, and I'm really grateful to them too, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, for their help. So here we go.
Yeah, and of course, yeah, and obviously, being the 75th anniversary of when the two bombs were dropped on Japan, I know you had a connection with that. In fact, going to Japan to interview people.
Yes, in fact, that is why it's premiering now, because it's in commemoration of the 75th anniversary of the dropping of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945. And, when we went there, our tiny crew, three people, Chris Beaver, Michael Levin, and I, went there in 1979, attached to a YMCA peace delegation. We were told that we were the first American film crew to ever go to Hiroshima or Nagasaki since the war. So from 1945 to 1979, no film crew from the U.S. had bothered to go over and film these atomic biographies of survivors. Now, John Hersey had been there beforehand, other writers had, other still photographers had, but no filmmakers. I mean, at first we didn't believe it because it was 1979. There are two atomic biographies in Dark Circle, one filmed in Hiroshima and one filmed in Nagasaki. And in fact, this restoration, this revival of the film is dedicated to the memory of Sumiteru Taniguchi, who was a survivor of the bomb in Nagasaki and who became a lifelong peace activist. So there is that connection, and it's important that we don't forget that we're the only nation that ever dropped these bombs on civilians, our own civilians in the around the Nevada test site, in the Marshall Islands, and in these two cities in Japan. And hopefully we can come back from the brink and make sure that it never happens again.
Yes, indeed. And certainly, looking back at history and looking back at your film, hopefully is going to help move that argument along.
I hope so, and I really appreciate your interest.
Oh, my pleasure, Judy. Judy Irving, thank you so much for the interview. And everyone, go watch Dark Circle.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judy.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. This is Arnaldo, and you have been listening to Judy Irving, whose film Dark Circle is being reissued today, the 21st of August, 2020.